It's so good to be here with you, and we love to come here. And we also enjoy going with your pastor to Zambia. We did that last year and the year before, and it's just such a pleasure. And this church is just a very special church in that you give your pastors liberty to also be missionaries to the world, and you all have such a mission vision. And every time we come, we see improvements being continued, which we are amazed at all that you've done with this property. And so we just want to congratulate you. We're living in Ireland now, and we like it there a lot. One thing that we do there is Ron goes on the big commercial ships with the chaplain of the Cork Harbor, and they witness to all the sailors. There's so many sailors on the high seas. And they all seem to, many of them come into the Cork Harbor from nations all over the world. So Ron's always coming home and telling me about how he's talked to so many people from the Ukraine, from Russia, from Crimea, from the Philippines, and from many other nations that we've been to before. So it's a good ministry for us. We don't have to go everywhere. Now, a lot of times where we live, the world's coming to us. So we're grateful for that, and we just thank you. The ministry in Ireland is going well, and they need more church planters there, but the churches that are there are filling up, and so we praise God for that, that the people in Ireland, they still have a heart for the Lord. It's been known as the land of saints and scholars in the past, and there's even books out, you know, how Ireland saved civilization, because during the days of the Dark Ages, the monks in Ireland, out on that island that's in the new Star Wars
episode,
Skellig Island, out there on that island, monks lived and they preserved the scriptures during the Dark Ages. So that's pretty interesting to realize that. So. But anyway, we're thankful to have a part there now, and we thank you so much because this church prays for us and supports us on the mission field. So thanks a lot.
Thank you. Hallelujah. How many of you are glad to be here? Look at your neighbor and say, I'm glad you came tonight. There are 1.5 million seafarers around the world from about 100 nations. Over half of those, 1.5 million, are from the Philippines. And so when I go on, and I go on as a sidekick to the chaplain of the Seamen's Christian Friends Society. And so I just really enjoy, he calls me his photographer. But we go on and we minister to these guys. They've been on the high seas, traveling in all these different places, and by the time they get there, coming from sometimes nations that are hostile to Christianity, they're ready to talk. And they want to talk about Jesus or whatever we want, even Muslims. And that is an amazing thing. And so it's fascinating for us. When we went to Ireland just about 2 years ago, we'd been there several times, but God just opened up divinely. I was sharing with Mike and Cheryl before the service. We had dinner together over here at Texas Roadhouse. That was nice to get introduced back. And we were sharing about how that all the different people in that nation, and how God opened the doors into so many different places, and where we had so few friends at the beginning. God just opened doors all over the country. And so we are very thankful because of what he is doing. Ireland is a nation that has lost its way in many ways. About 12 years ago, they say there were 90-some percent of the population attending Mass every Sunday. It's a Catholic nation. This is the Republic of Ireland. You have Northern Ireland, a little sliver of land in the top. Primarily Presbyterian, and many others, the most evangelized part of Europe. But Ireland itself is not, and dominantly Catholic. very few evangelical churches, as Christy was saying. And about 12 years ago, there were about 90 or so percent of the population attending Mass every Sunday. Today, they say about 30%. It's just plummeted. But nobody believes that 30%. Everybody says it's probably more like 6 or 7%. And so you've got cathedrals, beautiful buildings that are empty. And yet it has a very strong, very deep, down to the bottoms of the earth, cultural relationship with God. And you can hear it in the Celtic songs. You can hear it in their poetry. You can hear it, for example, I don't know how many of you have ever heard of Celtic thunder. Anybody ever heard that? Okay. I would love to go to one of their concerts. We found it online. And one of the songs, Celtic Thunder, actually these are five men from all of them a success in their own right who joined together and formed this group called Celtic Thunder. And all the songs are, or most of the songs, I mean, you got the Galway Girl. That's not very spiritual, but because you got a lot of songs that have, that talk about we're off at sea and the waves, it's like the perfect storm. God save our souls. And you listen to that, and sometimes half of the song is in Irish. And there's something about the dynamic, the electricity that is there. Any of you who've heard their songs, Heartland is my favorite in the album Heritage. And it's a fascinating thing when you go there as a guest and then you study and hear all the different things that this nation is about, including a five-hour special on the history of Ireland. And when you watch things like that, because it was our job to get ourselves acquainted with where we were, who we were with, and so it's a fascinating thing. And what I've noticed is it's one of the most innovative international, multinational countries in the world right now, who the people are so many of them, so many companies are even finding themselves setting up base there. Apple Computers, there are bases there. I certainly don't want to get into politics, but it's an interesting thing when you are living in a nation and so much is happening. I've written two books and involved, I've written the beginnings of four more, and then right now I'm getting ready, when we go back then I'll continue one of those books, and I feel like I know which way we're going, but right now I've written two books. One of them is called Is There a Grandfather in the House? And it deals with, it's a straightforward talk to Christian leaders in transition. Actually, businessmen have told me it's helped them in what they're doing. But this is a book that we just started, just published about 3 months ago. And then the Joseph story, some of you probably already have this, but we are relaunching it on Amazon in probably about the 1st of August. And so this has been, this is the story of Joseph in Egypt, and the other is a story of dealing with all kinds of situations. This picture was taken one block from our home in Ireland, and so it's looking out over the Celtic Sea, and this grandfather Celtic fisherman was sitting there, and I decided to just slip up next to him, and Christy took a picture of us. He's got a heart of stone, but anyway, I'm hoping my heart's a whole lot softer. But if you're interested, they're out there and available for donation. So that's all there. Praise the Lord. I would like to share with you a little bit tonight on a story. It's along the line. Actually, it's next to the last chapter in the book, and it's on Barzillai. And what I'd like to do is just share a little bit about this man and what happened to him. And how many of you have heard of the name Barzillai? Would you raise your hand? Okay, Mike has, but it's a common thing to not have heard much about him, because a lot of people would classify him as an obscure character, but let me tell you why he is not really as obscure as you might think. I want you to turn to 1 Kings chapter 2 and verse 7. And there it says, David is on his deathbed. When you're on your deathbed, you don't talk about every subject. You don't talk about the birds and the bees. You don't talk about the weather. When you're on your deathbed, you have learned that right now you need to focus. And you only talk about the most endearing thoughts that in a few moments, and at most a few hours, you won't be able to talk any more about. And this is what David said in 1 Kings chapter 2 and verse 7. Solomon, show kindness unto the sons of Barzillai, the Gileadite, and let them be of those that eat at thy table permanently. For so they came to me when I fled from your brother Absalom. He helped me. So, this man must have not been as obscure, though his name is only mentioned four times. There's a story behind this man. And I'd like to share a little bit of that story. Not all of it, but I'm actually partway through, about halfway through a book about him, because I find him intriguing. It'll probably not be the next book I put out. I'll probably put out something on David. But I want you to realize there is something to the life of this man. And I'd like to begin and talk about a little bit about what happened to David, because you can't talk about Barzillai until you've talked a little bit about what happened to David. David found himself having, well, it's a long story. Polygamy is a terrible thing. And polygamy brings all kinds of things to bear. We faced it in Africa. We didn't face it as much in Africa, and certainly not in the 21st century, but it is there. But this problem David found himself in, we had many children, and quite a number of wives and many children, and there was the Absalom that rose up, and there were all kinds of situations. There's not enough time to go into all the different things. I told someone I don't want to write a book about all of the life of David. It'd be 1,000 pages long, and nobody would buy it, and fewer people would read it. So I want to talk about this man, David, for a moment, and about how his son, Absalom, rose up against him, and he would have had the throne, to usurp the throne from his father. And all of that was linked all the way back to the sin with David and Bathsheba. It was a very dark time in Israel's history. And so as it was this time, David found himself fleeing, Zedekiah, the high priest, Zadok, his two sons, Jonathan and Amasa, they stationed themselves in a position where they could get word quickly to David to help him, because he had fled the city. And as he had fled the city of Jerusalem, now here he is down close to the Jordan River, and these two men took message to them, because now we have the downfall of Ahithophel, and we have dramas that are happening around Jerusalem. And these two young runners take a message to David that you must cross Jordan, and you must do it tonight, because if you do not, all those who are with you will be killed, because Absalom is out to destroy anyone who supports you. And so David quickly went over the Jordan River in the night. And as he did this, and this is found in the 17th chapter of the book of 2 Samuel, and I'd like to read just a few verses here, three verses. And in the 17th chapter of 2 Samuel, it says, "And it came to pass," verse 27, "when David was come to Mahanaim, that Shobi, the son of Nahash, of Rabbah, of the children of Ammon, and Maker, the son of Ammiel, of Lodabar, and Barzillai, the Gileadite of Rogelim, out beds and basins, earthen vessels and filled with wheat and barley and flour and parched corn and beans and lentils and parched pulse and honey and butter and sheep and cheese of kine or cattle from cows for David and for the people that were with him to eat. For they said, the people are hungry and weary and thirsty in the wilderness. So let me begin the story this way. David found himself now, he's crossed the Jordan River, and he's in the city of Mahanaim. Mahanaim was a very significant city in this area of the Golan Heights, which is today known as the Golan Heights. It's the eastern plateau. It's higher in altitude than the rest of Israel. The weather is different. It's chilly at nights, even in the summertime, when the rest of the land is sweltering hot. Why, it can be actually quite cool up there in the Golan Heights. And so that's where David went to. The city of Jerusalem is over on the west side of Jordan, and it's in the dominant part of Israel, and it's in a place that all kind of traffic, there's commerce, there's everything runs through this city. It's a religious central location. But over in this part, it's like the Highlands. It's like Ireland, or it's like Scotland. It's not like them, really, but it is the Highlands. It is there's a different culture there. There are different people there. All this other on the west side of Jordan is a place that if you would go to, you would say, this, I've been to Israel. And most people who've ever gone to Israel, that's where they go to. But if you were to cross over the Jordan and you were to climb up into the Golan Heights, it's the part that has officially belonged to Syria since for many years. But in 1967, the Six-Day War, Israel took back the Golan Heights and they retrieved it so that they, and even though it's in dispute and it's considered one of the disputed lands of the world, why, it will never be given back. Read anywhere, and it'll say it will never be given back to Syria because Israel feels too strongly about it, and Israel is a significant player in this world. And so anyway, they've got this land, and they continue to live there. Well, in the days of Barzillai, and in the days we're talking about here with David, he found himself having been ordered warned across the Jordan. He finds himself in Mahanaim, and now he wakes up after a short night of rest, exhausted from the travels, having fled from Absalom. David finds himself and all those who are with him, and there are 30, 40, 50, maybe 200 or 300 people who come with him, because if you do not go with the king, that means you've cast your vote in support of the usurper, Absalom. And so many people, especially public people, people in politics, they traveled with him. And there they were in the city of Mahanaim, awakening to a sunlight in a strange land. It was a little bit scary because they didn't know who were their friends. Would they even have friends? Yes, it's part of Israel. But in those days, nobody knew who was a friend and who was not a friend because the politics of Absalom had so divided the hearts of the people. And so there, as they were here on this location, why, they awakened. And David looked up toward the mountains. And there he saw three men coming with an entourage of people, servants, and donkeys, and sheep, and cows, being driven, all coming together, led by three men. Let's call them the musketeers. These three men were an amazing group of men. They were three men who came, all of them wealthy men. These three men, led by Barzillai, there is Shobi. He is an Ammonite. He is a foreigner. And there is Maker. Now, these three men, let me tell you who they are and why this is important. Shobi was an Ammonite. It's his father, Nahash, who had, in the days when Saul was deciding whether he would become king, why, it is Shobi, whose father, Nahash was the king at that time, and probably Shobi wasn't even born or was certainly quite small. And so Nahash had gouged out the right eyes of the men of the city, and Saul rose up to save them from this attack of this man, Nahash. Nahash had an axe to grind against Saul. but he had an axe to grind against Israel. They considered them enemies, and this was really a complex situation. It was like one primitive tribal nation gathered against another primitive tribal nation in those primitive days of 3,000 years before Christ, somewhere in that time period. And so now, as Nahash led this attack against them, there was bad blood between Israel and... Now, David, remember, ran from Saul. Saul was casting his javelin at him. Saul was trying to take his life. And so David found that Nahash reached out to him, and he says, "Hey, buddy, I'll help you any way you can. Now, I'm not asking for your loyalty. I just want you to know, if Saul is chasing you, there must be a friend in your heart." And he chose to be David's friend. Well, David just said, "Listen, I need friends." And he didn't have to sell out his loyalties. He just had to respond. And this Nahash did this. So then when David became king after Saul's death, why, Hanium, I think is his name, H-A-N-U-M or something like that. Hanium, the son of Nahash, becomes the king. And David sends his soldiers over to honor him, give him gifts, congratulate him. But the old men around, or the young men around that young king, said, "No, he's come to spy out the land. He's going to attack you when you're not looking." And so they cut off the beards and the clothing of the men up to their buttocks. That's a word, isn't it? They cut it all away, dishonored them, and sent them packing, sent them home. And they did that. It was just about the worst thing you could do. It would disgrace these men. They could not come home. It'd be like Duck Dynasty. How could they have a TV program if they didn't have that beard like that? And so they couldn't go back to their home. So they had to stay, and I believe it was in Jericho, until their beards grew back out. Then they could be repatriated to their family. Okay, now Hanium had a brother, and his brother is Shobi, also son of Nahash. Every reason to hate anything Israeli. And yet, he was found by Barzillai. Now I'm going to go to the other one. The other one is Maker. He was a friend of the family of Saul. Saul's family and his family were so close together. And when Jonathan and Saul were killed on Mount Gilboa by the Philistines, why, the nurse who is taking care of the little boy, 5-year-old boy, who belonged to Jonathan, David's loyal friend, why, this nurse picked him up, but in her haste to run to save themselves from possible disaster, she dropped him, and his legs became crippled. Injured, obviously, must have injured his spine. And so his legs became crippled, and Mephibosheth was never able to walk properly again. So they decided, those who were close in to the family of Saul, what is the best thing we can do to save this little boy's life? Because the culture of that area, why, they said, we cannot, the Middle East, I think is what you'd say, they could not leave him exposed to David because David might kill him. Well, it was far from the truth, but that's what they thought. And so they went across Jordan to Mahanaim, to Lodabar, and in Lodabar they found a friend of the family of Saul who had been friends for years, and his name was Maker. And they deposited the little boy Mephibosheth there. You know the story, the 9th chapter of 2 Samuel, of how that David sent his servants to go and find a man. Ziba had said, "There is a young boy of the house of Saul, and if you'll go and find him in the house of Maker in Lodabar, you can bring him back and give honor to all the covenant you made with Jonathan. You can bless that boy." And so had David brought him. And he said, "But am I a dead dog?" He didn't know that he was really in safe country. But David honored him, and he ate for the rest of his life at the table of King David. It's a beautiful story. But let's go back to the principal characters. You got Maker, a friend of the family of Saul. And you got Shobi, S-H-O-B-I. He is a friend He is a an enemy of Israel. His father was, but he has taken a good look. Have you ever been in church? Something happened, and you said, "What they did is not right. I think I have another opinion." Have you ever been at a football game and you differ with the Spurs? A good example. You differ with the referee's call. When you differ with the referee's call, you're just an armchair quarterback. You can't do a thing about it. But in this case, here is a case where Shobi looked at what had taken place between his father, the bad blood between Israel and the nation of Ammon, and he said, "I tell you what, that's a bad situation." Then he was discovered by a man named Barzillai. Barzillai is an old man. He's 80 years of age at the time this story is written. And as he is a man who has such a balm of Gilead in his heart. Actually, he's from Gilead. It's like he is a company man of the product. He can better sell this product, which is a medicinal balm that can heal the sicknesses. It's one of the only miracle cures of the day anywhere in the land or anywhere on the earth. It was a very, there were many things. If you had a headache, you used it. If you, whatever was going on with you, you somehow figured a way that you could use the balm of Gilead. And it would soften the skin. It would do what was necessary. And with leprosy and all these things, there were people who wanted it but couldn't get it. But the balm of Gilead was right there. And Barzillai was from that area. And most scholars would tell you in a heartbeat, this man is as if he had the balm of Gilead in his nature. Everybody he met that had war in their spirit, he touched them, and they were changed. I remember I met David Du Plessis. He was a South African known as Mr. Pentecost. Met him 5 times, and every time I met him, he left a deposit in my life. And then he invited us to move to South Africa and to assume the oversight of a Zulu Bible college, and so we did. But I asked him one day, and this was in October of 1984. I said, Brother Du Plessis, what is the one thing that I need in our move to South Africa, the apartheid nation of South Africa, with all the drama that was going on, the arms embargo, everything that's going on? I'm going to teach in a Bible college. What do I need that I cannot live without? And he said, he looked up at me, he was kind of short. He said, get the war out of your spirit. If there's any war in your spirit against any person, any profession, anybody, lose it. I've worked real hard. I'd like to tell you I have succeeded, but it's just sometimes a little bit difficult not to have a little war in your spirit, especially if somebody cuts you off in the wrong way. Are you with me? And life gives you plenty of opportunities like that. Here is a situation where a man named Barzillai, long before he's 80, long before he would ever want to take supplies and give them to a king who's running for his life, he had a spirit of peace about him. It came from the soil. It came from the region. It came from the people who make this product, the balm of Gilead. It came from God. And he had such a peace that rose up inside of him that everywhere he went, you know, if you have a forgiving nature, you will always be forgiving. You will always be touching. People cannot get by without having the feeling, the the effect of your nature and who you are and what it is that God has done in your life. Yeah, that's why they say friendship evangelism is probably one of the best ways. If you can just reach out and touch somebody, like the telephone company used to talk about. If you can just reach out and touch someone, but touch them from a heart that's been transformed, from a life that's been changed. And so it was with Barzillai. He looked at these two men, and he began to talk with them long before he met up with David on that time, right? He began to talk to them about, now, I know you hate Israel, Shobi, but have you ever really looked at it? You know, every opinion of all your relatives may not always be accurate. Maybe you need to cut those they have strong opinions against some slack. Maybe you need to say something different. Maybe you need to walk a different walk. Maybe your life agenda, your life plan should be different from all your clan, all your family, all those around you, your father, your brother. Your brother still is against Israel, but should you be against Israel? And let's look at David the king. Look at all the things he's done that you probably in another world could compliment him for. And he began to come around because he began to change his worldview. And obviously, here is a foreigner from a family with bad blood against Israel that Barzillai has obviously influenced in some way, because he joins the musketeer group. He joins with Barzillai on a day when the king has been running for his life, and he chooses to take of his own personal wealth and bring it as a gift and lay it at the feet of this king whom they've been convinced they can believe in. Maker was a friend of the family of Saul. He had been the one who raised Mephibosheth. If anybody would know close hand up, close and personal, that David was a king to be feared, it would have been Maker. Until the day those men rode up on those horses. All of Israel rode on donkeys. And they were not to buy horses from Egypt. But boy, some of those kings did it anyway. And David even had a few horses, and when he had men going to war, he did not send them on donkeys like the high priest would ride upon. He sent them on horses, and they came on horses to the house of, in Lodabar, the house of Maker. And there they took this crippled young man, about 21 years of age, and they brought him back to Jerusalem without explanation. No one really knew. They didn't know what David intended for him. Maker didn't know until the rumors started coming across the airwaves, the countryside. They would come back, cross the Jordan, and back to his house. And he heard how, you know, it's not all bad for Mephibosheth. He got there. He thought he was like a dog. He thought he'd be kicked. He thought he'd be destroyed. He thought he'd be killed. He thought he'd be executed. David made him almost like a prince. He's been living in the house of David for all these years. And all these stories had to come back to Maker. And Maker found himself now also meeting Barzillai. Maybe they had been friends for years, but there's one thing about it. There is an impacting influence that has come upon the life of these men, Shobi, the Ammonite, and Maker, the man from the tribe of Manasseh, who is there, and he has found himself so influenced by Barzillai. And so then one day Barzillai comes knocking. I hear the king is running for his life. You've heard the news feed about Absalom, that prodigal son, and how he has betrayed his father. And he begins to talk to them. You know, guys, I think you and I have an assignment. I think the king's going to come our way. I mean, there's no way he's going to stay over there on the main side, on the other side of Jordan. I think he's going to come to the highlands. I think he's going to come to our doorstep. And I think we need to get ready. And then all at once the runners, the news, because it's amazing. In Africa, we knew, what was it called? The African bush telegraph. And the bush telegraph really works. and sometimes you'd say, you know, they say down in the bayou of Louisiana, you get all the way down to past Golden Meadow, and you get down in there. They say that the houses were situated, and they had certain ways to communicate, almost like the smoke signals the Indians used, and they could almost beat a boat coming up the bayou with the news from what was happening up or downstream by just transfer from house to house. They had certain ways to do it. Nobody understands how that works. And yet, they had those ways. Well, in the case of Israel, Barzillai received all this news, and he began to talk to these guys. And he said, guys, will you help me? Now, he's a patriarch. He has his family, he has sons, he has grandchildren. He's 80 years of age. They've learned to respect him. He's such a man of peace. And every time he comes to them with an opinion, they just change their worldview. Because after a while, a man like this is going to impact you with his opinions to where you feel like, what do I know? This guy has become my icon. He's become my role model. He has become my influencer. He has mentored me out of where I was. And it's kind of like, Lord, what all have we left to follow you? Yes, a bunch of ragged old tents and a bunch of torn nets. And what have you really left to follow after Jesus? And sometimes our lives are about like that. And so as they talked about it, they came over the hillside and they over the countryside, and they came down to where David was in Mahanaim, which had been the home of Ish-bosheth under Abner in the days, the first 7 years of David's reign as king over Judah. And so this city has a long history. And now David has chosen to come there. They didn't know they had friends there, but only once they found themselves realizing, we have sat down what we thought was questionable. It's out of the way. It's a remote place. But we've sat down among friends. And all the people of the area, because of Barzillai, they began to have a different reception for David. And David found himself among friends, and this was a good thing. And so, as they began to talk, then the years or the months began to pass. I'm not sure how long. I've tried to actually find out how long did that war between Absalom and David last. But David had fled, and Absalom was running the land almost, and they were trying to find David. Whatever length of time it lasted, Barzillai took care, carte blanche, of every need that David had. Took care of he and all those people who were with him, all their food needs, their housing needs. He lived in Rogelim, which was another city over the hill in another area, a few miles away, 4, 5, 6 miles away, which is a long ways in those days. And yet he would come over and he made sure that every need that the king had was taken care of. And so David didn't have a thing to worry about. The day finally came. The death of Absalom has taken place. I don't have time to go into that. But Absalom died, slain at the hands of Joab. And now David awakens to the fact it's time to go home. There is a draw to the city of Jerusalem. There are people who are saying, King, come home. It's not good days. They're difficult days because everything is not just, let's bring the king in with ticker tape parade. There were some animosities throughout the land, and some people were still, they had chosen to follow after Absalom. But now Absalom is dead, and will they follow after David? And David's almost got to prove himself to people. And it's a tough time for David. But David realizes God is going to help me. Remember when he was leaving the city of Jerusalem? And Ittai, an Italian leader of a band of soldiers, mercenaries, had attached themselves to David, and they'd served David. Now Ittai comes to him, and David says, why are you coming here? And he said, I've come to follow with you. I've come to cast my vote for you. But you're not even an Israeli. You're not even an Israelite. He said, but I believe in you. Something they saw in the heart of David that was very good. And then there was Hushai, who came to him and said, I would like to follow with you. And David said, no, no, no. You are my wise counselor. Go and counsel Absalom and betray Ahithophel. And he did. And Hushai helped bring the war down, and David won the battle. And then there was Shimei, who cursed David from the embankment along the side of the road. And he threw rocks at him, and he threw dust at him, as if he was a madman, so filled with anger and hatred against David. And Abishai, who was with David, said, or Abishai, some people say, he said to David, let me kill him. Let me deal with Shimei. And David said, just a moment, let me think about this for a few moments. And he thought about it, and he said, oh God, would you, I know you chose me over all my brothers, but if you had to do it again, would you again choose me to be king? Lord, I don't know, but I'll tell you what I am going to do. I'm going to put you on the spot. I'm going to let you choose again. If you want Absalom to be king, then let him be king. If you want me to be king, I humbly receive your offer. But I'm not going to touch that man. I'm going to let him curse me. And I'll let you fight my battles. It was a beautiful picture of humility. Actually, a book you would enjoy reading is called Tale of Three Kings by Gene Edwards. Anybody ever read the book? Okay. I like to read it every so often. I got it on my Kindle. I love to read it every so often because it says so much. And one of the things Gene Edwards says is, God knows, but God doesn't always tell. And that's about the way it is. And so in this case, he lets Shimei live. And David continued on down the road. Now David emerges from Mahanaim, realizing that I've got to now return to Jerusalem. I still don't know how the people feel. I don't know who are my friends, who are not my friends. I really need a counselor. Ahithophel has slain himself. He's committed suicide, hung himself, and he is no more. I've got Hushai, but one counselor is not all I need. I need a multitude of counselors. Lord, I need. And he looked at Barzillai, this 80-year-old patriarch, and he said to him, "Would you walk with me?" Barzillai said, "Yes, I will walk with you." And they walked toward Jordan. Stopped just before Jordan, and he said, "Barzillai, would you come back with me to Jerusalem? Let me take care of you the rest of your life." I don't think David was trying to return payment for hospitality rendered. I think what David was doing was just trying to get a good counselor whom he could trust. He knew this man loved him. It's best to receive counsel from someone who loves you. If they don't love you, don't listen to what they've got to say. They may say, "Yeah, step out in front of that train. It'll be all right." And David just didn't have that. He had a trust for Barzillai because, after all, he's been living on his dole for a while. And so now David looks at him and he said, "Would you go back to Jerusalem and let me take care of you the rest of your life?" Barzillai looked at him and he said, "Why would I do that? Why would I return to Jerusalem? I no longer have the appetite for accolades or notoriety or fame or seeing my name in the newspaper wouldn't do me any good. I have no appetite for such things. But if I gave you my youngest son, Chimham, would you do for him what you promised to do to me? Would you be kind to him? Would you be generous to him? Would you do to him whatever you would have chosen to do for me?" And David said, "It is done. Whatever you require, I will do for your son." End of conversation. They never talked about it anymore. They crossed Jordan, and he walked with him a short distance up the bank and a little bit, and then he said, "Well, you know, I've got to go back. You see, David, I'm 80 years old. I can't even taste my food anymore. When the women sing and dance, I cannot even hear them. I'm an old man. I just want to go home, and someday I want to be buried beside my parents in my village. That's all I want. I can't even taste my food anymore. It's not something. Serving you, helping you would be grand. Incidentally, in England, in Ireland, grand is not what you think it is. If they say, 'Oh, you look grand today,' that's like giving you you're looking okay today, but it's not like wonderful." And so anyway, he says to David, he gives him this. David promises him. He goes back to his home, and Chimham went with him. They go back to Jerusalem. The story is just about to finish. But as he goes back to Jerusalem, according to scholars, and in Jeremiah chapter 41, I believe it is, I don't have that written down here. It's in the book because I've got it on next to the last chapter of the book here, chapter 29, I believe. but Jeremiah, I think it's chapter 41, speaks of this young son, Chimham, and he calls it, actually, it's the inn in Bethlehem. What David did, the scholars all agree, because there seems to be so much supporting this. What David did is he went back to Jerusalem, because the Bible doesn't tell us what David did specifically, but this is what David did. He said, if I'm going to honor, and remember on his deathbed, he said, take care of the sons of Barzillai, for they took care of me when I was running for my life from your brother Absalom. When he went back to Jerusalem, he sent a messenger to his family, to the lawyers, or whoever held in trust the property that had been given by his father Jesse for him. And he said, sign that over to Chimham. Give him that land. And so he gave him a tract of land in the city of Bethlehem that had belonged to himself. And then the years passed. 400 years, it still bears his name, Chimham. Spelled Chimham in some translations, K instead of CH. And so he, for 400 years, he kept his name. But scholars believe that when Joseph took Mary and was trying to find an inn, and he couldn't find one that could house them in the stable of the inn of Chimham, Jesus was born. What a legacy for the man who was the host given by the king whose great, 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 great to 25 degrees, I think it is, grandson would be called the son of David, Jesus himself. Find it interesting. The Bible is not really as confusing as you think. When you go to looking at the stories of the Bible, there's so much there, and there's so much that God wants to speak to us. And I think it would be very good for us to take a look at our Bibles and read them. And then some after you've read it through about 30 or 40 times, I remember our pastor's mother, grandmother, because our pastor, Ruth Bell, was in San Antonio and at Destiny Church. That was our home church. It's our home church today. And Ruth Bell, when she was 10 years of age, having been born and raised in Japan, why, she's from English descent, and her mother was Canadian. And living in Japan, why, someone challenged her at age 10 to read the Bible through. Well, it took her 2 years and to read it through. She really struggled at 10. But then after she was 10, now she's 12, she said, I've got it now. And every year for the rest of her life, and she died in her 80s, she read the Bible through every year. And that's something. But you can read it after a while, and then you can drop down anywhere and you know exactly what's happening next. And it really is a blessing to know what the Bible says and how it relates to us. Hallelujah. Well, how many of you want to be a man or woman of peace? You want to influence people around you. You can be a giver. You can be an encourager. You can be a forgiver. David Duplessis was a forgiver. He always wore a lapel pin here, and it said 70 times 7. That's all it was. Oh, boy, heathens love to ask him, what in the world is that? Is that some new Amway product or something? You know, they'd look at him funny. And he'd take that little cheap pen. It wasn't very expensive at all. I'd love to get one made that would be a little bit stronger. It broke after a while, but he took one off and he pinned it on my lapel. And I wore it until the thing fell off of it. But it's interesting how he was always a forgiver. Somebody come up and they had an axe to grind, he would say, I forgive you, my son. That'll really get under your craw if you have a spirit of enmity. But it was something how he would be able to give such things. And so was Barzillai, a man who was a giver in many ways. Would you stand to your feet? I'm going to ask the pastor to come in just a moment, but I want us to just take a moment, take an inventory, and ask of what spirit you are of. I have to do the same for me, because sometimes I fall off the wagon. I don't act right. I don't think right. I don't do right. Anybody here like that? And you have to forgive. And the Lord wakes me up at 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning and says, remember that comment you made? You need to take a trek. Go see them and ask forgiveness. God wants to do that to all of us. So what I want you to do is take your right hand, put it on your chest, and ask the Lord, help me be more like you want me to be. Help me to be a world changer. Help me to change people's hearts. Help me to adjust people's world views. Help me, oh God, to have the right spirit, to have a spirit to behave myself wisely at all times. Help me, oh God, to always have the right heart for you. I don't want to follow after vain philosophies. I don't want to have feigned faith. I want to have real faith. I want to be a trusting individual, but I want to trust in the right things. I want to cast the right votes because I know the right character issues. But I don't want to be a pawn of anybody. I want to have a right heart. I want to see what you want to do in the earth. And I want to let you do it in me. Hallelujah. 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 Let's give the Lord a hand. Pastor, come.